all those homes.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The foreclosure tide continues to waterlog the American dream. Listing firm RealtyTrack this morning says there's been a 24% jump in the number of homes that got at least one foreclosure-related notice in the first quarter of the year. That's more than 800,000 homes. One way the Treasury Department's working to stem the tide of foreclosures, the department says six big banks, including Chase Home Mortgage, Wells Fargo, and City Mortgage, are all taking home part of a $10 billion in federal subsidies for loan modifications. Over in China, numbers out today show that country's GDP slowed in the first quarter to its weakest growth since 1992. But a closer look reveals the worst may be over. From Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
6.1% growth is slower than previous quarters in China. But most economists consider this headline number a lagging indicator of the past. And going forward, a host of other numbers out today suggest economic sprouting. New infrastructure projects like railroads are way up. So is lending, consumer spending, and factory output. Glenn McGuire at Société Générale thinks China has bottomed out.
We're starting to move up the second side of the V. It's clearly rebounding on a massive liquidity surge that's been engineered by Beijing.
The government has told state banks to lend now and state shovels to be ready.
No other economy has the ability to be able to mobilize resources as quickly as China can, being still essentially a command economy.
Still, a V-shaped recovery can be the first half of a W. A second dip could come when the stimulus wears off next year, especially if the rest of the world stays weak and Western shoppers remain a little too thrifty. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Chinese shares were lower slightly in Asian trading today. The Hang Seng was down, the Nikkei up. European shares are higher, and the Dow gained more than 100 points to close at 80.29 yesterday. Well, today, the nation's second-largest mall operator has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. General Growth Properties has more than 200 malls across the country. Google releases first-quarter earnings today, and Wall Street seems to be of two minds about it. On the one hand, they expect the company to show some growth despite the fallout. On the other, some worry about the future, particularly its investments in new media sites such as YouTube. Rico Galliano reports.
Google doesn't break out most of its division's earnings, but analysts have estimates about the cash YouTube generates, and the consensus is not much. Youssef Scully is internet analyst at Jefferies & Company.
YouTube is still a very, very small percentage of Google's revenues, 1 to 2%.
That's 200 to 500 million bucks a year by his figures. Not enough to turn a profit, and not the performance some analysts expect from a $1.65 billion acquisition. But Scully predicts that'll change as YouTube downplays its image as the place for amateur pet trick videos.
Recently, they signed a deal with Disney for short-form content. The idea there is if you create professionally created content, advertisers will want to advertise against it. We believe it will work.
He's less sure about any potential deal between Google and another new media service, Twitter. Rumors abound Google's in the running to buy or partner with the popular site. Scully says Twitter might have technological value, but business-wise, no one knows how to actually make money off it yet. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, where you can choose up to four customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. By Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. Producemore, conservemore.com. And by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution by carrying the load of 280 trucks by rail. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
President Obama tomorrow heads to Trinidad and Tobago for this year's Summit of the Americas. And one conversation that will keep coming up down there is Cuba. Our economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us now to talk about the president's cracking open of the Cuban door. Chris, is this more of a beginning or an end?
Well, depends on which country that you're in, but I think that is the beginning of a fundamental change in U.S. policy toward Cuba, at least when it comes toward trade and investment. And for Cuba, I think it's the end of the embargo. Now, that's a dramatic statement. The embargo has been on there for over four decades, but I do think we are starting to see the beginning of increased trade between Cuba and the U.S.
I guess you could look at the impact on Cuba and say it's positive, but what about for the economy in South Florida, where a lot of Cubans and Cuban Americans live?
Well, South Florida, as you know, is in a depression. If you're in the camp that believes, in general, that freer trade is good for an economy, I think this can only benefit the South Florida economy, to have more commerce between the two nations. Now, Cuba is very poor, so it's not that this is going to turn around the South Florida economy, but increased trade flows between the countries, the opportunities for entrepreneurs to develop businesses, net-net, it's a good thing for South Florida, and it's a good thing for Cuba. You know, most of the time, trade is a win-win situation.
What kind of lessons have we learned from this trade embargo over the past, four decades or more?
I think the real lesson that you take from this is that trade is revolutionary. Commerce is revolutionary. And trade is not just money and entrepreneurial opportunities. It also means exposing an economy to different ideas and ideas that are an anathema to a bureaucracy that is in power. And we have a very good counterexample. You remember in the 1990s, the Clinton administration came under a lot of pressure to set up trade embargoes with China because of a lot of the human rights violations. And I'm not minimizing, by the way, I am not minimizing human rights violations in China. I am not minimizing human rights violations in Cuba. But the administration continued the trade with China, and it was the right move. China is now more integrated into the global economy. There's a lot more information in that economy. It's moving in the right direction. And so that's what I want to see trade with Cuba. I think that's the real lesson to take here.
Our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, joining us this morning. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And share your thoughts with us at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Thursday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.